We kick off hour number three of the program. This segment brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. They're celebrating 85 years this year, established in 1934 in the aftermath of the Great Depression. And they've got members all over East Tennessee. If you're in Blount, Hamlin, Jefferson, Knox, Loudoun, Roane, Sevier, Sullivan, and Johnson City, they've got you covered at the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Over 20 branches all over East Tennessee. And you can join up for just a $5 balance in your share savings account. And then that opens you up to all the services they provide. Go to TVACreditUnion.com for more information and to get joined up with the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Basically, anything a bank can do, they can do it, and they can do it better. They're a nonprofit moving together through life, upward and forward. It's the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union, and they're celebrating 85 years of serving their members here in East Tennessee.
It's official.
It is?
Yep.
What is
it?
Okay.
Yesterday, officially, the Basketball Writers Association and the Sporting News. Knew I'd remember it.
Yeah.
Named Grant Williams as a first team All-American. That coupled with his SEC Player of the Year title mean that number two, Williams, will hang forever in the rafters of Thompson Bowling Arena or the next arena we build after this one. So that's done. With the official announcement yesterday, Grant Williams meets the requirements, really the only requirements he can meet while in college. The other ones are being named to the United States Olympic team and becoming, is it NBA All-Star? Is that the fourth? You have to be an NBA All-Star?
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, since he's still in college, neither of those are possible. This means that Grant Williams did it. They will retire number two someday. So, in case you were wondering how good this guy really is, pretty damn good. Not that many names hanging up in the rafters, but with this announcement yesterday, his will forever. Impressive. He's a junior, by the way. He did repeat as SEC Player of the Year. This is his first-team All-American selection. And now we get to watch him for at least one more game, hopefully about six or so, and then wait to see what type of decision he decides to make at the end of the year as far as whether or not he will return to college for his senior season, perhaps to three-peat as SEC Player of the Year and repeat as first-team All-American. But it's a really big honor. I mean, Sports Illustrated released this morning their top 50 players in college basketball this season. Grant Williams came in second, obviously behind Zion Williamson. Here's what they said. The 6'7 Renaissance man picked up where his 2017-18 SEC Player of the Year performance left off and hasn't looked back, leading the conference in win shares and box plus minus minutes and placing in the top six nationally in both. He finishes the regular season and SEC tournament averaging 19.3 points, 7.7 rebounds, 3.3 assists per game, while shooting 56.9% from the field. Super, super impressive season for Grant Williams. And frankly, when you look at all the other guys on this list, he's probably, well, especially in the top five, he's kind of the one that doesn't look like the other ones. The other ones are guards who shoot a lot of threes and get to the basket. And then, obviously, Zion, who's a freak of nature. Grant, slightly undersized at, 6'7", 235 to be doing what he does. But according to SI and probably most publications, we were talking about this to start the show. I mean, Davey said it. If not for Zion Williamson, he's probably your Wooden Award winner. He's probably National Player of the Year. It just so happens that he's going up against Zion for all of those awards as well. But Grant Williams, first-team All-American selection. I don't remember who our last first-team All-American selection was. It has been a minute.
Yeah.
It has been a minute.
Did you
first-team.
Did you hear what Grant Williams said about the NCAA tournament?
No, I'd love to know.
It can all be over so soon, and that's the threat that's always in the back of your mind. You also have to have the mentality of, hey, keep winning and keep having fun, and you get more time to spend with your brothers every single day. For us, March is going to be a defining moment for us.
Hopefully it's one shining defining.
Let's hope so. Moment. I kind of wonder the way that sounds. It's almost, it feels like, I mean, I hope he means it's kind of the last run with, you know, he and Admiral. He's not saying that he's, you know, considering, like, thinking in the back of his mind, this might be it. I hope he's talking about just this year.
I think he means this year. Yeah, yeah. I think he does. I don't know. Maybe he's made that decision already, but I would say, based on that, he's talking specifically about this tournament.
Some players, and I hope this happens to Admiral Schofield, get in the, like, lose and you're done forever scenario and just refuse to lose and you know, can't miss and just play out of their mind. And, you know, there are other guys that can kind of get tight in those situations. Admiral strikes me as the type of person that can carry a team in crunch time. It's kind of weird with this team because we didn't get to see that moment come in the Auburn game, like in terms of that championship moment. We didn't get to see.
You saw it against Kentucky, but it was a shared moment, right? Like Admiral hits the three. I guess Grant had 2 3-point plays, so maybe you could say it was him because, you know, one is the old-fashioned way, and then he hits the one from the corner, and then you had Lamonte's let's not forget, Lamonte had a 2-point layup kind of early in the comeback and then obviously hits the dagger three from the top of the key, but that was more spread out, whereas, you know, go back to Gonzaga, and it was the Admiral Schofield show, whereas Vanderbilt was the Grant Williams show. So, in a way, it's good because you have different people and then a collective who can kind of come together to get it done. Mm-hmm. But I hope that if the situation arises, and I think it's probably matchup dependent, that Tennessee has an idea of where they need to go with the basketball. You know, Admiral mentioned that in his video for the Players Tribune. His freshman year in the SEC tournament against Georgia, he gets the last look at a potential game-winning three against Georgia, and he barely hits the rim because he wasn't ready. I think Tennessee has multiple players now that are ready, willing, and able to take and make the big shot. Sometimes that's a really, really good thing because if a plan breaks down, you don't, you know, have any fear of kicking it to another guy. But sometimes I do wonder if that causes some, not jealousy, but maybe just confusion. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's when you rely on the coach to draw something up for, you know, the player he has the most trust in. And again, I think that's matchup dependent. You know, you think about the Ole Miss game, right? What was the plan there? It was get it to Grant at the top of the key, let him drive, and he's able to hit the floater. Whereas, you know, against Gonzaga, I mean, you talk about this too. Rick Barnes looks at Admiral for the last possession and says, "Where do you want the ball?" So this is where coaches will earn that paycheck if Tennessee were to be in a close game and have to rely on one person or a couple of different people to make those plays. But I think you feel good that you've got a lot of different guys who can do it.
I believe Dell Ellis was the last first-team All-American. So that would have been his 83 season.
And his jersey hangs in the rafters, if I'm not mistaken.
Second team in 82.
Okay. What's Tennessee's key for the first weekend? I mean,
show up.
Dynamite drop in, Marty. Now I know what you mean, though.
It's like kind of like, right.
We know that's enough against Colgate, right? But like, I mean, what's Tennessee's big? What's our biggest fear in the NCAA tournament? Like, is it lack of defense? Is it
you can't hit a bucket from three? Like, just no one can make a shot.
So is that? I think that's what it is for me. Is like make shots, and then if you're not making shots, don't try to just keep shooting. You know, that's when we need to readjust the game plan and go inside more, attack the basket, get jumpers, that kind of thing.
I think the key is to attack the basket off the dribble, because we know, I mean, you're going to play Colgate in the first game. Their whole plan is going to be stop post entry to Grant Williams.
Mm-hmm. And Auburn gave him the blueprint for that.
If you stand around and try and make post entry to Grant Williams all game and think, well, we're trying to execute the game plan. Coach Barnes said, get inside. And you just stand there trying to throw it into him all game. And then everybody stands around watching. Like, that's just not a good recipe. Like, get out in transition some. When, as you run your motion offense, look for opportunities to penetrate and drive, because that's, I mean, that's what's been missing from these three-point shooters. That's why Lamonte hits the three, because Admiral started driving to the basket, and his man sunk.
Well, he pump faked and got a guy in the air, and then he drove to suck in Hero, and then he kicked. It was a great play by Admiral.
Yeah,
he got two guys way out of position on that move.
So I think it is, don't forget to attack the basket off the bounce, and then because when that happens, you know, everything opens up. The kind of the dish off to the other guy around the basket. If his guy slides over to help, is there. The kick out for three is there. You get guys in foul trouble. That's the other thing. Tennessee wasn't shooting any foul shots.
Mm-hmm.
In games they've lost recently, they're not getting to the line. They're missing three-point shots. I think a lot of that has to do because they stand around trying to throw the ball into the post, and the threes they end up taking are late in the clock, and they're not good ones. They're not getting to the line because they're not getting the ball inside, and they're maybe too focused on only making post entry to Grant Williams instead of driving the basketball and then seeing what opens up, probing the defense, push and pull the defense, and force them to have to help and recover and rotate. So that's it for me on offense. On defense, it's how are you going to defend the ball screen, and can you do it that way every time? Like, can you execute your ball screen defense? If I'm playing Tennessee,
yeah, it's pretty big.
If I was, I don't know if Colgate profiles this way, but if I was a team getting ready to take on Tennessee, and I feel like I was a big underdog, but I had a good, or my best player was my point guard or my two guard, I would run ball screen for that player every single possession. And I don't know if you noticed, but against Auburn, a lot of the ball screen defense had trouble when they would start going towards the ball screen, and then they would, what we call, reject it. They would go towards the ball screen, but then reject it. That guy would roll and replace, and Tennessee was already trying to switch it, like, yep, you talked about yesterday.
Switching screens that didn't exist, man.
Yeah.
We were seeing ghosts out there.
So, like, I mean, I would just run ball screen stuff all day. So on the defensive end, it's how are you going to play the ball screen, make that decision, and then stick to it and execute it. And on offense, like, you just got to attack the basket, not just with a pass into the post. Do it off the bounce.
You know, it's funny. Grant yesterday in their Monday media session, he kind of mentioned that they were tired. That it was more of an emotional type of tired, because even after the win, when they're trying to get rest, the adrenaline, right, is still going. You're reliving, mm-hmm, that comeback. And I'm not trying to, you know, downplay that comeback, because it absolutely was that. I mean, Bert Bertelkamp and Bob Kessling on the radio were describing it, and I don't know, man. Like, maybe in the moment it didn't feel that way, but when you think about it, that really and truly was probably the greatest comeback win in Tennessee basketball history. Like, Duke doing the 10 points in under a minute at Maryland is one of those that you never forget. But 8 points against Kentucky in the SEC tournament in 2 minutes and change with the big shots that they hit was absolutely enormous. I know the way I felt 5 hours after that game, it's probably a little tough to sleep. Like, you don't want to go to sleep, right? You just want to sit there and keep talking with your teammates and your coaches and keep reliving it and spending time with your family. I get it. I'm not trying to make excuses for them, because I still think Sunday was, maybe it was tired, but it was also like mentally lazy. But I'm kind of looking at the way this bracket builds. Colgate should be, you should really take care of Colgate. Then you got to get up a little bit, right, for Cincinnati, mm-hmm, or Iowa. But if it's Cincinnati and Columbus, that's a little bit different feel. But then you get the break, right? Like, then you get a rest. And then it's going to be, I mean, we're assuming Purdue or Villanova. Good teams, but they aren't quite the marquee, you know, a Kansas, a Gonzaga, anything like that. So if you're able to win that one, it's going to be easier to look ahead with an extra day of rest. I do think there's something to it. You know, I said all season I want Kentucky in the semis if we can get that, because I think that's our best chance to beat them. We got that, but I never even considered what that would do the next day. And I don't know. I don't know. It seems a little bit like excuse making, but it also makes a lot of sense. You know, I mean, there's a reason after a really, really big game and a big win, like, you're supposed to have a break. So maybe I'm buying it a little bit. Maybe this team can refocus, and obviously the way the bracket sets up, you're not going to have that big, huge, marquee matchup and then have to play again 2 days later. Whereas, you know, you beat Kentucky, and then you've got a mismatch nightmare with Auburn. You're emotionally and physically spent, and Auburn has just kind of cruised through the bracket. They got a really nice draw based on their seeding. I mean, they didn't have to exert that much energy at all based on who they played. And they're a guard-heavy team that doesn't really get tired anyway, but I don't know. I'm just – the fact that Barnes said it and that he thought he recognized it in the pregame, and now you've got some of the players saying it, man, like that Kentucky game did feel like a Final Four type of game. That did feel like a national championship type of game. And then you had to turn around and play a swarming mound of fire ants the next day. Like you just beat, you know, three lions off of you with a stick, and then you fell into the fire ants. And that seems like it's what, like you're exhausted, and then oh damn, like this by itself is nothing. But man, when I'm already this tired, I can't battle this. You buying that? You giving it any credence as to why they look so just sluggish and blah on Sunday, with the exception of Lamonte Turner?
I give it a lot of credence. And then I turn around and say, then you know, why
did we not dig deeper?
Like why isn't your coach trying to provide that emotional? Like sometimes you just have to and gut it out. Like sometimes you just
but that's the thing. Don't you think he was trying to calm them down after the Kentucky game? Like knowing what Rick, like you know what I'm saying? Like yeah. Don't you think it was like guys, hey, good win. This is big. We have to refocus.
You know they talked about it. You know everybody
no, that's
knew
what
it.
I'm saying.
People on Twitter talked about it. Like this you know. You're making Russian Finland comparisons. I mean, come on.
I saw that.
Like this
is actually a pretty good comparison.
This is. I mean, you have to know. I
I don't know. I guess that's what I'm saying though.
They knew that. Why couldn't they? I guess if they had kind of laid it all on the line, and I felt like I feel like I could tell the difference between they got themselves up emotionally as much as possible, but it still wasn't enough. I feel like I could tell the difference between that and not showing up.
That's fair.
And because they didn't show up going to Rupp Arena when they had plenty of days, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a Wednesday to Saturday, but I mean, come on, like that's mm-hmm. normal. Like they have a propensity to do this biggest moments. So I think it's both. I do think it mattered.
I don't know if two times in a season is a propensity. I mean, 2 out of 34.
Well, I don't know. The callers yesterday wanted to lump in the Auburn game on the road there and the LSU game on the road there also. So they would say 4. I'm with you. I think those are kind of...
The LSU game, Bone and Kyle were sick. Now, they didn't have Waters, but it was a road game. And then same thing at Auburn. Like,
they were kind of sloppy at Auburn, but I agree. Wouldn't say they didn't show up.
That's what Auburn does, though. Yeah. They force you to be sloppy. They force more turnovers than anybody.
I just think this team isn't – they're just not super talented. I mean, they can't just show up and just be
I agree with that.
Long and athletic. Like, I mean, they have to be on edge to be one of the best teams in the country. And when they're not on edge – they're very, very average. And when you're very average and Auburn starts lighting up from three, it's over.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
And I do think Auburn's gotten a whole lot better from – I mean, they basically started here, played Duke pretty close,
then they
had an injury,
tanked,
and couldn't find themselves, and now they've cycled back up. I think they're a lot better than they
– Who was out for them?
The
was it Purifoy for a long time? Who was out for them?
No, they still have Wiley, who's – He played spot minutes in the NCAA tournament or in the SEC tournament.
Okay,
was it Spencer? Like, I mean, he's playing now, but was he the one who missed a stretch?
That's what I was trying to. I can't remember who they had that was out for so long. Because they did. They took a really big dip. Like they looked pretty good to start the year. That game against Washington, they looked good. I'm with you. I thought they played Duke pretty well, all things considered. And then they just kind of went in this weird, weird funk. And then the last couple of weeks started to pull themselves out of it. I mean, we mocked the schedule all year, having to face Auburn late.
Trying to pull up the game log.
Hell, when the season schedule was announced, I said Auburn final weekend, great. Mm-hmm. Great. You know the SEC's setting you up there.
You even said it'd be for the title.
Well, I said that's what the SEC was hoping for, and then Auburn went in that. Well, I mean, it was for us. I think the SEC set that up thinking those would be the two teams in the mix. And then they didn't think LSU was worth a damn, so they gave them a cake schedule.
I mean,
Austin Wiley.
Yeah, he's only played
24 games, and Purefoy was in 23.
So both of those guys then missed some time. Okay.
Yeah.
I think Wiley made his first appearance Friday. Hang on, let me see. Yeah, he got banged up late. He got banged up in February.
Mm-hmm.
And then so he was out for about 3 weeks and then came back and played just a few minutes against South Carolina, a few minutes against Florida, and he only played 9 minutes against Tennessee. So he'll actually help them be better in the NCAA tournament. He's the mm-hmm. their one guy with size. He's 6'11".
Mm. Interesting.
So when the season started, they had the 6'11 guy to go with all these guards, and they're a completely different team.
Gotcha.
Now he's still kind of only a 20-minute a game kind of guy, but that's still somebody you can go to if you're having trouble with the other team's height.
Sure. No, I don't know. I just think Auburn's a bad matchup when they're hitting threes, especially the way they did on Sunday. And then I do think there's probably a big check in the box of, man, you were just emotionally and physically spent. Not even just because of energy exerted on the floor, but I do think, I mean, dude, I couldn't sleep Sunday night. You know what I mean? Like, or Saturday night. Like, I was jacked up after that one. You wanted to sit back and watch highlights, and I'm sure they all wanted to rewatch the last 2 minutes, you know, 18, 20 times. Adrenaline's flowing. You can't sleep. Again, like I'm saying, you want to just lay there and think about what you just did. You want to relive it in your head 1,000 times. That kind of drains a body. Needed those ice chambers.
Purefoy didn't play until December 15th.
Okay.
So he was out for...
I thought he had been out, but I wasn't sure when he came back. So getting those two guys back, man, that's huge.
Yeah. We'll come back with more. Stick with us right here. You're listening to 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. This segment of the program brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3 and Out. Check them out online at goldsgym.com. Find the location nearest you and work out absolutely free with the free 3-day VIP pass as you try out Gold's Gym before you join. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of 3 and Out. Davey Hudson's a former 12-week challenge winner at Gold's Gym, and he's got you covered with your Gold's Gym fitness tip of the day.
Today's tip, if you're working at a desk, say you mostly spent most of your day at a desk, try standing, getting a standing desk if possible. If not, just throughout the day, just try to make sure you're getting up and you're moving around. I know it might not sound like a lot, but every little bit helps. The more calories you're able to burn throughout the day, the better off you will be. So just make sure you stay active. And also, just getting up and moving around helps to clear the mind a little bit to whenever you do go back to work, you're likely to be more productive when you're diving into whatever it is you need to take care of.
There you go. It's your Gold's Gym fitness tip of the day.
15 minutes of every hour you're supposed to stand is the what they say. Apparently it helps. My watch tells me to stand.
It does?
It'll warn you. Say, hey, you haven't stood up in a while. Time to stand up.
I mean, if you got to be in front of the computer and it doesn't necessarily translate to where you could have like a standing desk, maybe if you had to make a phone call, stand up and walk around while mm-hmm. you're on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Even using the restroom. Don't go in your seat, you know. Stand up and go to the bathroom. That's my tip of the day.
I just don't even know how to
respond. Don't pee your pants at your work desk.
Okay.
Tell me that's not a good tip.
That's a good tip.
Could everybody benefit from that tip?
Yes, absolutely.
Then it's a great tip. You are welcome, everyone.
I saw where Seth Davis said on the Dan Patrick Show that if Duke wins the national championship, they'll be the worst three-point shooting team to ever win it.
Yes.
Well,
you can't go back too far with that stat, though.
Well, I mean, to the line. You can go back to the line when the line came in.
That's only like 30 years.
What do you think about, because this kind of pertains to Tennessee, what do you think about my theory that you just can't win big-time college basketball games from the two-point line? Like, you're going to have to hit some key some key threes against the best teams in the country. It kind of showed with Tennessee.
Well, I mean, the best teams hit them too. So yeah, I mean, I agree with that. So I like no, I mean, I just I'm not saying it's like a duh, but yeah, like the good teams, unless you're Duke and one of the most elitely talented teams, yeah, man, you better be able to. You better be if a team is kind of better than you, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're physically better than you. I'm not saying they necessarily play the game better. I'm just saying more physically talented. Yeah, you've got to steal some points here and there whenever you can. And stealing a point by hitting a three is a big way to do it. I'm looking now. Tennessee hit 7 threes against Kansas. They shot 27 of them. That game went to overtime. You know what I mean? Like if you hit, I mean, hell, what'd they hit against Kentucky? Was it 8, 9? You do that, all of a sudden you beat Kansas. Game never gets to overtime. Against Gonzaga, I don't know how many we hit. I think it was a ton. Was it 12? Yeah, 12 of 29 against Gonzaga. Hey, you won. That's the difference. Because you hit 5 extra threes than you did against Kansas.
Tennessee
is... And I'm sure if you went down and looked, the majority of the games where Tennessee either won against a pretty damn good team or blew out a mediocre team, probably burying it from three.
Tennessee's 55.7% from two.
That's an insane stat for a team.
That's top 20 in the country. They're 18th. Here's some of the teams at the top. You want to try and guess who's best? 2-point shooting percentage?
Duke.
They are fourth. Duke is fourth at 58.3%. Gonzaga.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, interesting. I mean, we've looked at their field goal percentage the entire year, and they've kind of stayed at the top.
The second place team.
North Carolina.
Plays tonight.
No. Ooh.
Really?
So Belmont. 59.5%. Dayton was third. Murray State was fifth behind Duke, 57.2%. They're in the tournament, of course. Furman, who got snubbed, was sixth. And then you've got some other tournament teams in there, Liberty, New Mexico State, South Dakota State. I think they're playing that North Carolina Central for the right to play Duke.
That's North Dakota State.
Oh, is it? Oh, sorry. This is South Dakota State. My bad. Anyway, Tennessee right there in the top 20. I mean, Zion Williamson, he's shooting like 76% from two or something. I mean, like that's why Duke will win it without shooting great from three. It's not
so ridiculous. I mean, that is ridiculous.
I once said there was a stretch in the tournament. He had 19 straight makes.
Sure.
Which tied Javon Delorier, another Duke player this year, for a stretch he had earlier in the season.
Your top three-point shooting teams, the best three-point shooting team in the country was Lehigh at 42.4. Wofford's number two, 41.6. Then Virginia, 40.9. Other teams, you talk about a matchup with a team that shoots really well from two versus a team that shoots really well from three, could be that Duke-Virginia Tech game. Virginia Tech's eighth in the country at three-point shooting percentage at 39.4. And, of course, we've mentioned Colgate is 13th in the country at 39.1% from three-point land. So you'll have a little bit of that in the first round for Tennessee and Colgate. Another team, you're looking at potential upset, teams that could pull an upset, Northeastern. I mentioned how that line was pretty close in their game. They're 38.8% from three. So that's a team that that could be dangerous if they heat up from the three-point land in the NCAA tournament. Marquette, another one. They're top 10, 39.3%. All those teams better than Auburn, who's down at 27th.
I think I may have cracked the code.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think I may have just cracked the code.
All right.
Tennessee, on the year, has lost, I'm going to make sure. It's got to be sure. One moment, please. Almost there. Wow. Tennessee has lost two games all year where they hit more than seven threes in regulation. Do you want to know who those two losses were? It's very easy, really, when you think about it.
Both Auburn.
Both Auburn.
Yeah.
That's Tennessee's magic number. If you're not playing Auburn and you hit eight threes, you're undefeated. In regulation. There's your number. We're talking about shooting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Tennessee had some games where they didn't hit eight, and they were playing lesser opponents, and they won. But in big games, in the games you lost, and in the games you won, that's the number. If Tennessee can hit eight threes against teams not named Auburn, who are going to hit, you know, between 12 and 15 threes a game, that's the difference. And, hell, the only reason the second game you hit eight was because you had to shoot so many late. I mean, there was that one stretch of possessions where I think you hit two, you know, in a minute span when it was going back and forth like crazy. So that's Tennessee's number. They don't have to hit 15, but 8 appears to be the magic number. If Tennessee hits 8 threes in regulation, not against Auburn, they've won every game. How's that for data?
It's pretty good.
You know, I said the rematch against Kentucky when we played them here, I remember that I kind of gave my number, right? I said we were talking about what does Tennessee have to do tomorrow to beat Kentucky. I said they have to hit 10 threes. They ended up hitting eight that game, but no one could stop Jordan Bone, but they still got to the magic number, which apparently is eight. So I overshot the magic number and set it at 10, but looking at the season, which was this was very quick, obviously, that is Tennessee's magic number. Hit eight threes in regulation, shoot a pretty decent percentage, and you're gonna be just fine, regardless of who you play. Unless it's Auburn. Doesn't that sound about right based on kind of the identity and makeup of this team? Like, we don't need to hit 15 to beat anybody, but if we're hitting 3 of 20, if we're 5 of 27, like, that's where we get into issues. Because that usually means that a couple players are going 1 of 7, 0 of 6, 1 of 8, that type of thing. Tennessee's magic number is 8, and then as long as it's not, you know, 8 of 29 against Auburn, you're probably going to be okay. So there's our magic number for the NCAA tournament. Rebound the basketball, hit eight threes. Don't turn the basketball over. But I don't know that anybody in this entire bracket will force as many turnovers on you as Auburn was able to really in two games. Was it 30 turnovers in two games? Wasn't it 17 and 13 or 17 and 14? It was like 30 or 31 turnovers. It was a ton. I'm not saying, you know, none of these teams are any good in Tennessee's bracket. I'm just saying, athletically, Colgate, Iowa, Cincinnati, Old Dominion, Purdue, St. Mary's, maybe Villanova, but they're not nearly as good as they were last year. Kansas State. Oregon could probably cause you some trouble if you run into Oregon. They're super, super athletic and quick. But there's your number.
Well, at least one place thinks that Tennessee might be susceptible to Cincinnati, and they are a defensive-minded team. I mean, that'd be the first team you'd run into that would even have that potential. Tennessee popped up on the Washington Post 2019 NCAA tournament's most vulnerable top seeds. When we come back, I'll tell you what
they
the Post
just
said.
Needed it for headlines.
And we'll look at one more point on the shooting, though.
Boo.
I think it has to do with that getting some penetration off the bounce.
No, I agree. I agree 100%.
Once you do that, you get better threes.
That's how we get our best shots.
Yeah, and that's true for pretty much anybody. We'll take a look at Cincinnati and Tennessee, a potential second round matchup, and where the vulnerability may be for Tennessee next as we wrap up. Final segment, three and out. Final segment, three and out. For all your web development needs, check out 245 Tech right here in Knoxville. They power FoxSportsKnoxville.com. And they'd love to help you with your web development needs at 245 Tech. Check them out online at 245tech.com. And they can help you. They're locally owned and operated right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Speaking of Tennessee and the Volunteers, the Washington Post has called them one of the most vulnerable top seeds in this year's NCAA tournament. I mean, you mentioned a team that's defensively like Auburn, I mean, Cincinnati is that team. The difference is they don't score. Like, they don't.
Correct.
They as John Reed said yesterday, they grind you out defensively. So I do think that's a much better matchup for Tennessee than a team that is really active and takes chances and then hits threes like Auburn is. But here's what the Washington Post said. You can tell me which piece you agree with, disagree with.
Or none of it.
Rick Barnes, 22-23 tournament record aside,
okay,
the red flag here is a more traditional one as it pertains to the types of top seeds that fall early. Underdogs seize on opportunities to create and cash in on extra possessions. One way of doing that is through offensive rebounds. Tennessee struggles to close out possessions, ranking 266th in the nation in defensive rebounding percentage. That could be a significant issue against a Cincinnati team that seriously struggles to score at times but is consistently excellent on the offensive glass. The Bearcats are the number four team in the nation when it comes to offensive rebounding. So while their overall offensive profile is pretty mediocre, this is the one place where they really shine, and it just so happens to be a key weakness for the number two seed in the region. One other statistic of note, the Vols' opponents have shot extremely poorly from the foul line this season, with the 12th worst shooting percentage from the stripe collectively. That could indicate Tennessee has been a little lucky in compiling its otherwise impressive 29-5 record.
Wait, say that again.
The Vols' opponents have shot extremely poorly from the foul line this season, with the 12th worst shooting percentage from the stripe collectively. That could indicate Tennessee has been a little lucky in compiling its otherwise impressive 29-5 record. Add in the fact that the game will be played in Columbus, Ohio, just about 90 minutes away from Cincy's campus, and this could be a problematic matchup for an otherwise very good Tennessee team should the Bearcats move on to the second round. The Tennessee's been lucky from the free throw line.
Apparently.
That's not really debatable.
Well, their opponents have been unlucky.
Yeah,
so
sure,
to speak.
Sure. Their opponents have been 12th worst when you average them all up. That's pretty wild.
Maybe that's because we work so hard, we tire out guys, and then they just miss free throws because of legs.
I don't know.
That is a very interesting stat, though. I'll give them credit.
The one that jumped out more, though, was that Tennessee – I didn't know Tennessee was 266 in defensive rebounding percentage. Like
– yeah, that doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
It does to me based on Tennessee's profile, but I haven't – really
seems like
thought
it was that
watching
right
games.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it seemed if it was that bad, we would notice it. I notice it a lot against Auburn because they're bricking threes that are flying back out to the 3-point line.
I don't know. It props up against all the good teams: Kentucky, LSU, Auburn. Like, but naturally, it's going to pop up against better teams too. You know? Like, so I don't know how much of that just is better teams.
Yeah, like I'm wondering if it's maybe a handful of games that really, really skew that. Like, did Azubuike just grab eight offensive rebounds in that game? You know, did Hashimura do that for, you know what I'm saying? Like, we did play Kentucky three times. Like, that's probably going to skew it on the defensive glass.
Maybe, yeah, but 266 is really low.
No, I'm with
that's
you.
Work. That's
worse. I'm just wondering if maybe there were certain games where, we just got completely swung on the number, whereas against average teams, we're more even.
Well, Rick Barnes said, though, when they were number one and they won all those games in a row, he said, "I've told our guys that our lack of rebounding effort's going to catch up with us eventually."
He did say
so
that.
So they probably won some of those games against lower competition and didn't rebound particularly well, even though they won easily.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that kind of hurts that stat too. But you think about it, I mean, Kyle is your big guy. He gets rebounds, but he's not like a big physical guy that's just killing rebounds all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times he's out of the game in crunch time. So that is kind of a worry a little bit. I mean, when your biggest guys are Admiral and Grant, like we were talking about St. Mary's during the break. I mean, they have that one giant guy that gave Gonzaga all types of fits. I mean, you're going to be smaller than Colgate at some points in that game. I don't think it'll matter.
That's true.
But, so anyway, you asked for kind of points of emphasis early. Maybe this doesn't really, maybe you can even disagree with all of this, but I think you still would say that a point of emphasis has got to be the defensive rebound.
No, and I think that's a good deep dive stat to kind of find, really. I was wondering if they'd just be like, oh, Rick Barnes is bad in the tournament. Like, that's whatever.
Well, they kind of mentioned that through
it. No, they
out,
did.
So.
Yeah, which I appreciated.
22 and 23.
I mean, Tennessee averages more rebounds per game than Cincinnati does. But possession-wise, Tennessee's probably playing more possessions. I don't know. I'm really trying to make sense of that stat. Tennessee has three players that average over 6 rebounds a game. I think I just saw that Cincinnati has one.
Tennessee played a lot of games against lesser opponents where there are more possessions probably than a lot of teams in college basketball. So maybe that skews it's still a percentage, but that could still skew it a little bit. Like if there's a lot more opportunities for rebounds,
sure,
especially in games where you're not on edge, you're not having to get every single one to win the game.
Right, where you're up by 20.
Yeah, it's going to lower your number a little bit. So maybe that's part of it. But they better rebound in the NCAA tournament. I mean, that's true for everybody.
Interesting. They have two guys that average over 6, and then it drops to 4.5. Tennessee has one over 7, Grant, and then Kyle, and I think it was Admiral, that are over 6.
Well, and Cincinnati might be so good offense rebounding because they're so bad on offense.
You know, a lot of missed shots. lot of missed shots for Cincinnati.
And when you miss them badly, a lot of times there's more opportunity for offensive rebounds. It's like Auburn shooting threes.
They shoot 43% as a team and 70% from the free throw line. So you want to talk about unlucky? Well, they shoot 70% as a team from the line.
He's Houston Kress for Davey Hudson. I'm Nate Hodges. You've been listening to 3 and Out on Fan Run Radio. Tomorrow we'll talk a little more college basketball. Also get into Jeremy Pruitt, spring practice, and some football analytics that they've been using in recruiting. So you don't want to miss that. Tune in tomorrow, 7 to 10, right here on WKGN. Talk Sports is next. Keep it locked in to Fan Run Radio.